Welcome to the worst nightmare of all. Reality.
Explore the lesser-known stories of our unknown world. Join the pursuit of the paranormal with Ash and Greg.
Hi all, thanks for joining me and Ash on this week's episode, where we have a fascinating conversation with the guys from the Aliens and Stuff YouTube channel. But before we join the conversation, we have a small promo clip from Black Lotus Productions. They are a group on Facebook who also have a YouTube channel where they talk all things conspiracy theories, the paranormal, UFOs, aliens, and everything strange and unusual. So here we go.
And on the horizon, on the western horizon, there's set a tight little triangle of three very bright stars. And they just looked artificial. I mean, they twinkled like stars twinkle, like stars do, but they didn't look natural.
Suddenly in the rear hatchback window, a face appeared, and it was there and it was gone. And it was like this horribly deformed, mongoloidish looking face. And it scared the bejesus out of me. And I remember diving to the floor and then heard footsteps approaching. And it was my friend. And I'm like, did you see someone hanging around the car? You know, I don't remember the exact words, but it was like to that. And he's like, well, no, there was no one around. I didn't see anyone. The street was completely bare, actually. And my mom came up and I asked her and she said, no, and you're probably just imagining things and blah, blah, blah. But it always stuck with me, that experience. Because it was the first time that I kind of saw something that I couldn't explain or didn't make any sense.
Ghosts, alien encounters, cryptids, and everything strange and unusual. We are Paranormal News Network. Interesting news, fascinating people. You can find us at Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and Amazon Music.
Thanks, guys, for joining us. We are joined by the guys from Aliens and Stuff, the YouTube channel that started last year, I believe. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, really pleased to be on the show, Ash. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So we've got Spencer, Mike, and Tom with us. Just want to quickly introduce yourselves and sort of how you got into the topic. Going to start with Spencer.
Okay, yeah. So it was Tom's idea originally to start doing a show. Originally we were thinking of a podcast, but when COVID came around, we had a few drinks and we know somebody that has a film studio. And we said, I'll tell you what, why don't we just, you know, take it to the next level and jump on that. Personally, I've been interested in the paranormal more so than aliens, I would say, since a young age. I've seen some weird things. So I was very, very eager to sort of step into the field. What's been great about doing the show is it's given us an opportunity, well, me an opportunity particularly to cover, you know, everything from cryptids and conspiracies to UFOs, which obviously is the hot topic at the moment.
So, yeah, I mean, I kind of jumped on the bandwagon because we've known each other for nearly 20 years, the three of us, and all went to school together, et cetera, et cetera. And we always wanted to do something like this. And Tom, which I'm sure will tell you, has got a massive interest in kind of aliens and UFOs and all that kind of thing. Spencer's, as I say, the more kind of paranormal side. And I kind of sit in the middle, really, and I thought I'd just jump on the bandwagon. But we thought we'd start doing something because ultimately it's that age-old question, isn't it, is what people want to know is, are we alone? And I think it's a really interesting question to try and pick apart and answer. And I don't think we maybe will answer it, or will we, which I'm sure we'll discuss later in the show in a few days' time. But that's kind of the reason why we launched Aliens and Stuff, really. And the stuff bit is obviously anything, really. It can't just not just UFOs or aliens, but stuff can be, as Spencer said, cryptids or paranormal stuff or conspiracies or anything like that.
Absolutely. And for me, it's like, you know, I've always, it's no, you know, it's no secret that, you know, I want to believe in aliens. But I think, you know, if you ask me, if you ask like 16-year-old Tom, you know, do you believe aliens are real and are they visiting Earth? I'd be like 100%. And I think now, when I got older, I look at things kind of a bit more logically. And actually, probably the biggest thing doing the show is we look at things and I picked the first few topics. And after doing a lot of research, you look at it and go, oh, actually, I don't know. I sit on the fence now. And then you think, oh, God, well, is that what they want you to think? And then, you're like, you know, there's so many questions that come up. And I think what we try and do is, you know, there's a lot of channels out there be like, oh, yeah, aliens are real because of X. And you've got to look at this and that. And this is your proof and whatever else. But rather than what we do is look at what people say is proof and then try and pick it apart a little bit. And, you know, if we generally come up saying all three of us think something is paranormal, we think it's real, generally hand on heart, that's what we think. Because actually, probably more often than not, we do think that it's something that can be explained. But that makes it even more powerful when we do find something which we do think is unexplained, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I particularly liked the Bob Lazar episode that you did.
Oh, I was
Where one of you said, yeah, I believe. One of you said, no. The other one said, undecided. And
Bob Lazar was a proper sticky one because, like, I did a load of research into Bob Lazar. And I again, Bob Lazar is one of those things. As a kid, I was like, this guy clearly is telling the truth. Like, yeah. How can he be lying? Look at all the evidence. And I put across all my evidence. And then you watch Spencer go, actually. Yeah. And then he tried to counteract what I put in as facts with his facts that he found. And again, like I said, you look at it and go, but that's what they want you to think. And then you go, well, he didn't actually say this, but, you know, and it goes into it. And then we have a heated debate about it. And it's all a good bit of fun. But Bob Lazar definitely telling the truth.
And I was very much sat in the middle on this one as well, because I was like Tom. I very much believe Bob at the beginning. What Spencer brought to the table turned me undecided. So yeah. It was a bizarre one, really.
Yeah, well, you've got to look at, I think, the historical context for a lot of the things that are said, you know, and you've got to look at people like Stanton Friedman and his opinions on Bob Lazar. And I mean, you know, huge respect to Stanton Friedman. So, you know, I take everything he's saying with a lot of kudos.
Rest in peace to him as well.
Yeah, and rest in peace. But yeah, it was a real interesting topic to tackle. We are talking about perhaps having a follow-up at some point, but there's so much else to talk about, isn't there?
Oh, there is, there is. Just on the Bob Lazar thing, he's such a divisive kind of person, the whole subject around the enigma of Bob Lazar. Same as Jeremy Corbell as well.
Oh, Corbell. That's a sticky wicket, that is.
I'm going to let Spencer take this one.
Yeah, your thoughts, really.
Okay, so, I mean, the first thing is I'll be honest, I got a lot of flack from people watching the video about Bob Lazar. I'm not an anti-Bobber. I like, you know, I've got a lot of interest in Bob, but I'm just saying there's question marks. I'm dressed like the Riddler here. There's question marks everywhere. But Jeremy Corbell, I like the guy. The only thing I would say about that is there's a lot of showboating that happens, in my opinion. There's a lot of showboating, and I personally think that detracts somewhat. That being said, if we ever made it big, I would probably be the biggest showboater out there. So, you know, I can't knock him too much, but I like his work. I like his work. I just think maybe a bit less footage of him pretending to be texting Bob and a documentary would be good.
Yeah,
when he's being raided by the FBI. Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's a funny one. Like, what do you think, Jeremy Corbell?
I like Jeremy Corbell, but I think it's very hipster, isn't it? The way that he puts information across, it's very kind of arty, and I like it. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. You know, I really enjoyed his documentary on Bob. I really enjoyed the one that he did with George Knapp on Skinwalker Ranch again, which we covered in an episode ourselves, which again is one of our most watched videos. But I think they could be half as long.
Yeah, I mean, can we swear on your podcast or not?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so I thought Jeremy Corbell was a dick, right? Because we don't swear on ours. So I thought he was a dick, mainly because he was like, yeah, because he's a showboater, and it was almost to me like he was trying to make Bob Lazar his puppet. I don't think he is his puppet, but that's because that's how it comes across. it brings less credence to the Bob Lazar story. But now I've watched more of his stuff, I don't know as a whole. I just don't think I particularly like him too much. I think he's a money spinner.
I like him. I just think he's...
I don't think he's a dick anymore, but I did think he was a dick. Do you know what I mean? I'm undecided on him. Let's put it that way. I'm undecided.
I mean, I would say the same. I'm undecided. I like the guy as a person. I'm undecided of his motivations. I think he wants a bit of glory for it.
Yeah.
But I respect that he's often the person to bring news to light first, and I respect him for that. And I certainly do enjoy his documentaries, but they are very arty.
Very arty. And I think the because of his position now, in the fact that the whole Bob Lazar documentary, which catapulted him really, and he's now going to be a conduit of all future UFO footage or UAP footage.
Look at it as well. He's been on Joe Rogan's podcast twice, you know, once with Bob, and then the other time he was on was George Knapp.
Yep.
So he kind of like... I don't want to say he's a bad smell hanging around credible people. He's not, because he's also credible, in my opinion. Yeah. But he's almost trying to make himself the kind of voice and face of disclosure. I think much like Stephen Greer is to a certain extent. But we could talk about him again.
Well, he's very polarizing as well, isn't he?
Very.
I mean, what are you? What do you boys think about?
What's your
about
thoughts?
Him? What do you think?
So Jeremy Corbell, I like the fact that he's brought this whole subject, he's sort of blown it up. Whether you like him or not, he's blown up the subject recently with the fact that this whole Bob Lazar documentary and getting Bob on film and after all these years, getting on Joe Rogan, you can't get sort of, well, you can't get a bigger podcast reach than Joe Rogan.
No.
So to get on there and be, like you mentioned, be on there twice with two big characters, Bob Lazar and George Knapp, you've got to be doing something right. But who are you doing right for? Is he a disinformation agent? Is he putting stuff out there because he's been told to put stuff out? He's been given interesting footage to put out, because he seems to have got this incredible footage that nobody else seems to have got.
Yeah, I was going to mention, where's he getting this from? Who's feeding him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the information.
I do think as well with Corbell, we're in marketing. That's our day job, me and Spencer. And the art of marketing is storytelling.
Mm.
I think Corbell is a very, very good marketeer. And I think he tells a story very, very well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That could be a theory as to why he is given that footage, because he's very good at distributing it, which could be a very tie into, as you say, he could be a misinformation guy, but I don't know.
Well, obviously talking about marketing, I mean, a big part of marketing is personal branding. And that's one thing the guy has got on lock. You know, he knows his personal brand and he wears it well. You know, and he's what you would call in networking circles a super connector. You know, he seems to be integrated within the community so well. But maybe this is my own fault for not doing enough research on him, but I'd be very interested to know more about his background and how he came to such prominence. Probably ignorance on my behalf, but it's interesting. It'd be an interesting deep dive, I think.
What do you think, Ash?
Yeah, I think like you're saying about the showboating, I was watching a documentary about Jeremy Corbell. It's about 40 minutes in before I realised it was about Bob Lazar, about Jeremy Corbell. So since then, I just he just put me off him straight away from watching the Bob Lazar doc. So obviously, he's like, got some good, interesting stuff on there. When the focus is always shifting back to Corbell, like, who's it really about?
I think you're right, Ash, definitely. But I think to play devil's advocate a little bit here, we're all in, I call maybe ufology an industry. We are well informed, I would like to think, as a group, all of us, about the phenomenon. And maybe he's just trying to target people that don't have an interest or have a mild interest or are uninformed about UFOs. And the way he's doing that is through storytelling and being arty to try and kind of suck them into the to the to the topic. And maybe that's why he's doing it rather than as you say, 40 minutes before you know it's so true. I completely agree with you.
I think you did a shit job, really, because the first like 10, 15 minutes, I mean, if I wasn't into UFOs and Bob Lazar, I would have definitely have turned off. Like that bit where he's in that cosmic bit at the beginning, and it's like, what is this? And it's just him walking along in a CGI background.
Yeah, I'm like, if you're a Mickey Rourke fan, then you would have been all over it, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Fair enough. But no, it's fair enough.
On that note of, like you say, getting people that maybe aren't totally interested, did you hear about Demi Lovato is going to be fronting a UFO investigation program? I know a couple of people that have been in the running, obviously more like well-known in the UFO world, but I think it's better that there are people like Demi Lovato. It's good for the industry, like you call it.
100%. The more people that embrace it... you know, and I think, you know, I've said this to the boys a few times, you know, you go back just 10 years ago and, you know, you'd open up the Sun newspaper or something. And it was like, you know, my gran was kidnapped by an alien and impregnated or whatever. And it's some bizarre, completely mad hatter story. And now you've got, you know, US Navy chases things they can't describe and come out openly and say they don't know what they are. And it's like the story now is taken far more seriously than what it was just 10 years ago, which I think, you know, and again, getting people like Demi Lovato or whatever else it is, people that people know going, oh, well, I really like her. And if she's taking it seriously, then maybe it is real.
We've recently had Miley Cyrus came out and said that she'd witnessed UFOs. Famously with the Phoenix Lights, you've got Kurt Russell came out and was possibly the first person to report that. So I think you do have to take some of it with a pinch of salt in what they're saying, because obviously they're celebrities and they're looking for the next Heat magazine article. But at the same time, I think the more people drawing attention to the phenomenon, it kind of authenticates it. And the more people, I mean, particularly like you said, in the last few years, the more people that are saying, oh, actually, and I'm not afraid to say, when we started our show, there were a number of people that we knew either personally or through business that they put their head in their hands as a massive facepalm. Why are you guys doing this? You know, you're going to look like nuts. And it's odd, the amount of people who've turned around to us after we started doing the show, people you never, ever would have thought believed in these things, that have been sending us videos, messages, telling us of their experiences and accounts. And I think anything really that opens up that discussion, why not? You know, whether it's for personal gain or not. I mean, yes, you don't have to buy into every story, but at least keeping the discussion fresh is primo for me. Yeah.
100%. My boss was the same. He was like, he sent me a screenshot of a photo of me in the studio he found. And he was like, and the first episode hadn't even aired yet. He was like, come on then, what's this all about? And I was like, oh, it's going to be a really hard conversation, this. Do you know what I mean? But to be fair, everyone's all supportive and stuff. So, but yeah, it was awkward, wasn't it, when we first started? But we just took the plunge with it, I suppose.
So what do you think has caused the change from UFOs don't exist, government coming out and saying, no, to we know they exist? So do you think there's been a sort of a defining moment, or is it a slow build-up?
Do you know what I think it is? I think it's a change. I think it's technology. I personally think it's becoming harder and harder for events or sightings or things like that to be swept under the carpet. And I think as a result of that, if they didn't tackle it as a government or as different governments and say, actually, there are things we can't explain, then there will be something eventually that someone will take that they cannot debunk.
Mm.
There will be an event that will happen that will be so clear visually, it'll be so clear audibly, and there will be so many people that will see it, there is absolutely no way that it will be able to be debunked by government.
I mean, I've got a theory.
Go for it.
So you've got SpaceX, Blue Origin, all of this lot, right? And Elon Musk is like saying, we're going to go back to the moon, we're going to go to Mars, and I'm going to make it affordable in the next, you know, in our lifetime, all of us here, you know, we'll, what he's saying is we'll be able to get a ticket to space, right? So if we go and colonize the moon and Mars in the next 20 or 30 years, if there are things out there, people are going to see them. So I think if we are being visited on a regular basis and you believe that, then I think, you know, the government's got a kind of duty to kind of give people a heads up and let people know. So, you know, you look at like the, you know, that UFO, Tic Tac UFO video that came out with the Navy pilots are chasing the UFO, right? That was leaked by Tom DeLong, I think, from Blink-182, like years and years ago, and they denied it. Then they come out and say, yes, it was an actual video from a fighter jet, etc. Yes, it didn't happen. And we don't know what it was. And the important bit is we don't know what it was. And then you've got the whole Trump thing, which is coming up, where in the next 10 days, he's going to, you know, this dossier is going to come out and loads of people are jumping on the bandwagon and saying disclosures 10 days away or whatever else is. I don't think it is, you know, but I do think there might be an admittance to things that are flying around that we are unaware of and we cannot explain, which is almost giving them the excuse further down the line to admit to things, but also kind of readying the public, if you will. So I think it's going to be a slow process if this happens. But I think, you know, if we're going to become a multi-planetary species in the next 100 to 200 years, this is going to have to be addressed at some point. And it's not going to be, oh, by the way, we've kept this secret for ages. It's going to have to be done to kind of protect their credibility. And that is what I think we're starting to see. Because, you know, the whole UFO Navy footage came out in the middle of COVID. And you're like, you know, the US Navy turns around and says they've been chasing things around the sky they can't explain. People are like, oh, yeah, cool. But it was kind of brushed under the rug. It's like drip feeding. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I think bringing it back to the question and then springing off again, I don't think there was one defining moment where everybody, you know, the common consensus changed. I think it's been slow and steady. I mean, you've had, you know, whatever you might think of them. I know a lot of conspiracy theorists out there, but, you know, you have the Clintons talking about UAPs and you've had Obama within the last week has been chatting about it. They've released the Pentagon has admitted to these naval videos. There's been another one very recently, the night vision one, which obviously Corbell was related to. And it's a case of, I was watching the Today Show on NBC, and they've confirmed that they've spoken to somebody else in the Pentagon, and there's more videos, etc. They're talking about disclosure in 10 days. Whether I think that actually, and this is coming back to your point, whether I think that they will, you know, this next 10 days, suddenly there's going to be a you know, oh yes, we've been aligned with, you know, Orions or whatever, you know, and I don't think that's going to happen. And I do think that a part of that comes back to particularly what Stephen Greer was talking about a shadow government, you know, things that lots of people have been speaking about over the years, whether the government themselves are going to express to the public versus what the deep state wants us to know, if you believe in that sort of thing, you know, there's going to be, it's not going to be in line with each other, but I do think there will be a drip feeding process, you know, no matter what's happening as it goes on, just to sort of naturalize people to the prospect of
conditioning, isn't it?
It is conditioning, because there's a lot of people out there that are going to be 100% against believing in it no matter what happens. And so that's why I think it's a gentle cultivation almost of the people's minds.
But I'm pretty sure, hand on heart, say that we're not going to get an announcement in 10 days saying aliens exist. I think that is just going to be too much of a shock to the system.
No.
But for people who know and people who care to look at, they will then start to question, oh, maybe we are. And I think that is the next step. So like you said, I think it's, you know, and like you said, you know, when did this happen? I think probably in the last like 10, 15 years, it's been a slow drip feed, you know? And there's more and more shows about aliens and UFOs and this, that, and the other coming out on Netflix and you know, and in the cinema, and there's loads of stuff, like particularly in the last like 10 years. And it's just, I think it's just readying people.
And just go back to what Mike and you said, Tom, about when we are interplanetary and going to Mars, private companies going to the moon, things like this. And if there's something out there, we are going to see it. So we were talking to Ben from 401 Files a couple of months ago.
Oh, we met Ben. Yeah, he's a nice guy. Yeah. We've been invited on the show at some point.
Yeah, he's a good guy, Ben. And we were talking about if there is something out there, like if there is something on Mars possibly, or that they know, something would happen to stop us getting to Mars, so we wouldn't actually get there.
Well, I think inevitably we'd have to get there at some point, because as a species to exist, we need to be multiplanetary.
What, we need to go to a dead planet to survive?
You terraform it.
No, I don't agree. I don't agree with Tom on that. See, this is, we're not going to do an episode of aliens and stuff now. Me and Tom, as you can see, do argue quite a lot.
It's good to be healthy and have a debate.
It's simple. It's if you don't go to another planet, and the human race always stays on Earth, there'll eventually be too many people. But not only that, you can get wiped out by an asteroid, you can get wiped out by anything. If you populate yourself throughout the solar system, looking at the long-term gain, we're talking thousands and thousands of years, you protect the human race.
Why have we not been back to the moon then, Tom?
I didn't even get to go on the moon, mate.
I'm going to leave it there.
We definitely went to the moon.
We went to the moon. But
we didn't have the technology to go there and stay cost-effectively, and there's nothing there.
Just going to add some context here for you, Ash and Greg. Tom has one pressing point, which is the moon. And Mike likes to push that button occasionally, but I don't think we want a 45-minute moon rant from Tom.
We definitely went to the moon.
It's interesting. At one point, I thought we didn't. And I thought, it's bullshit. And there was all these videos coming up saying, look, this crosshair's behind here, and the light from all over the place, and there's shadows where there shouldn't be shadows. And as time's gone on, I thought to myself, I think we did go. And I do believe we went. Then the next part of my journey of the moon is that we were either warned not to go back, or we felt we weren't safe to go back.
Potentially, yeah. I think that's definitely a cool hypothesis for sure. I think even if those two things aren't true, I think the fact that it costs close to like a modern day $1 billion in order to be able to launch a single Saturn V, once you're there, there was no way that there was money better spent elsewhere, basically. Even if you look at it from just an economic standpoint, rather than now, people go, well, why are we going back now? It's like, well, because it's more cost effective to do it, and we could technically stay. We know there's ice on the caps. We can like tap into that. You can make rocket fuel from it, etc. Carry on.
Unless we are going back and we just don't know about it.
Well, yeah, we could have moon bases there. They could be full of it. Who knows? Who knows?
There's robots on Mars.
Solar Warden.
Robots on Mars at the moment from about, what, 6 different countries at the moment? You know, why are we just sending robots first? Is there something there that we're a bit scared of?
Well, there is always the whole Mars argument where they sent a load of crafts to land on Mars, rovers and bits, and huge amounts of them failed. They kept failing and they couldn't figure out why. It's something, I don't know the statistic off the top of my head, but it's like well over half the amount of things that were ever sent to Mars to land, whether it be an orbital probe or a lander, the majority of them failed. And it'd be like they just lost communication. So you never know. But then at something millions of miles away, it's going
to
happen.
What do you guys think about Mars then?
So Ash made a good point. We were talking to Ben about Mars and the fact that would we be allowed to go, whoever would allow us, and the fact that something might happen which would cause us not to go. Shortly after we recorded that podcast,
like 20 minutes later,
literally 20 minutes later, SpaceX exploded on the launch pad.
Starship, yeah.
And it was
but
just like,
I would also argue that that was a prototype. They've blown a couple up, haven't they? But they've since then they've fixed it and whatever. But that's part of it. That's the whole point of testing.
But tying that in again, bringing it back is you're talking about if somebody doesn't want us going out there, there could potentially be, and I know I keep coming back to it, I'm not saying I'm a believer, but you know, a shadow government, a black ox arm of the government, which doesn't want us going out there, which could be controlled opposition to stop that. I mean, it's not just Stephen Greer that's saying that. You look at Ted Gunderson when he left the FBI. You know, he ran multiple departments within the FBI, applied for the head of the FBI role, left, went into private services, then turned around and said there's a shadow government, and they're suddenly saying, oh, well, Ted Gunderson's nuts. Well, if he's nuts, why has he been working for the FBI for 3 decades? It bears repeating.
I think if they don't want us to go, it will be like when the first crewed mission is on its way, something will happen to them and they'll all die, and therefore that will then set everything back by 10 years. Mm-hmm. It'll be something big like that, because the sacrifice of a, you know...
Tom bringing the morbality... it's very morbid.
It's true, though.
Yeah.
Look at 9/11. Sorry, I'm not going to get into that. That's a different chestnut. We don't open that one tonight.
We never open that chestnut.
That's an interesting subject, for definite. But yeah, maybe one for another podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We'll never do it. We've always said we've got a rule, no 9/11 talk.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
No, it's not a subject that we've even talked about.
No, it's
it may be worth editing out that.
It's too muddy. It's too
muddy. It may be worth editing Tom's night. He keeps doing it every single time we talk about something. He brings up 9/11. We have to edit it out every time because it's too risky.
I am really interested, actually, to hear Ash and Greg. What's your stance on Stephen Greer? Because we very recently did an episode and had some disagreements about it. What do you two think?
So for me, I think obviously we've heard this one comes down to the money. And one thing I said in the past is obviously this whole CE5 movement. I did like him in the past. I like some of his stuff that he's done. Unacknowledged parts of that was good.
Yeah.
Parts of it is just, I'm just like, no. The CE5 stuff, I'm not really too on board with. Obviously, there's lots of people talking about it was flares and people had to pay thousands of pounds to go on these trips and it's all, you have to sign NDAs. And when it comes down to his apps, he talks about wanting to connect the world because the more people doing it is better results you can get and the more people will be involved. But then he's charging £10 for the app.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I understand apps cost money, but you can make apps for £3. If it's £3, I would download it and give it a go. £10, I'm not going to do it.
No.
And if he wants more people to do it, he needs to make it more accessible and not just line his pockets. And more recently, he's been doing a couple of crowdfunding that he's been advertising for.
Yes.
And it's like millions of pounds for these things that he wants to do. But they get funded straight away, like hundreds of thousands being donated like straight away. It's like, who's giving him the money? But I know he has obviously got his followers, but for me, you follow the money and you just find greed.
So we, after our last episode, because we did the episode just on Stephen Greer, really, but we happened to kind of get into the conversation about CE5 and our thoughts on it.
Mm-hmm.
During the episode, we didn't do a huge amount of research on CE5. We admit that, because the episode wasn't about that. It was about Stephen Greer.
Yeah.
But since we put that episode out, we had quite the backlash from the CE5 community. I think rightly so in some ways, because we were not as informed as we should have been about what they do.
They're very passionate.
They are very passionate people, and rightly so, because it is a kind of very much, as they say, a change of mindset and whatnot. But they have been very kind to us since, and they've actually invited us. They've sent us the whole directive, all of the research, and we are actually going to spend the time learning CE5, the technique, with very open minds. Again, you saw our opinions on it in the episode. We haven't really changed from those opinions yet, but when we're actually going to learn how to do it, and then we're going to film an episode of us going out and doing CE5 with a group locally, and we've been offered kind of open access to that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say on the whole, and I completely share in your opinion. I mean, you look at the very recent fundraiser that Greer's done, and it was even for a repeat of the talk, it's $75. And he's claiming to have a photograph from the 1920s of a humanoid in dissection. And my whole angle on this has always been, okay, well, if you're trying to open people's eyes, why are you gatekeeping the evidence? Surely you'd want to put the evidence out. And then if it costs that much or you're fundraising, then charge people the 75 to find out the story behind it. That being said, the people that we've spoken to regarding CE5 in the UK, the communities we've been dealing with, honestly, they would give you the shirt off their back. They're some of the kindest, nicest people. I cannot fault the movement. I'm at a loss with Dr. Greer and my opinions on him. I think, you know, I'm going to look more into CE5 and see what it's all about. But I think $75 for a talk and then gatekeeping information, that's not the sign of somebody that's looking to open people's eyes, in my opinion.
But we split him into two, didn't we? So we split him into Disclosure Stephen Greer and CE5 Stephen Greer, because it's almost like they're two different people. And the disclosure thing, the getting everybody together, you know, anybody from walks of life that are professional, whether it be aviation, naval, even astronauts, this, that and the other, get them to come forward and say their piece, brilliant. Regardless of the motive, brilliant. If they've got a true story to tell, let's hear it. Loved it. And then when I was really excited when, you know, the documentary came out, and then when it started going on about, you know, meditating and calling on UFOs, using your mind and this, that and the other, and immediately I was just like, what? I was like, I'm not on board with this at all. And then obviously we made the video, and then we had all this backlash and this, that and the other. We started talking with the community and stuff, and actually we were like, well, you know, it's like one of those things. If people turn around and say, I don't believe in UFOs, right? Fine. But I say, I don't believe I can telepathically communicate with UFOs. But am I being narrow-minded and closed off by the fact that I'm saying that? So no, what I will do is go and I will sit there and I will learn how to meditate. I'll read the directive and I will give it a go. And I'm not expecting to see a UFO on the first time. But if I go five or six times and I see nothing, then I'll be like, well, you know, I'm willing to give it a go. I'll have my mind open to it. But before I do it, and at the state right now, I can't quite grasp it.
See, I think that your initial attitude was narrow-minded, because I'm the sort of person where I think it could be possible. But it's kind of like, you know, a lot of the yogis who preach enlightenment and then charge you $500 for a retreat.
Yeah.
If money and possessions in the material world are nothing, then why are you racking up millions of pounds?
The reason I'm willing to give it a go is because if I turn around to people and say, I think, you know, UFOs and aliens are real, and they turn around and say no, I'll say you're being narrow-minded. And that's what I was doing with the CE5 agreement. So I'm like, no, actually, okay, I will open my mind and I'll give it a go. 100%, I'll give it a go. But
yeah, I was pretty the same, because I was pretty, I'd say, not sure about the whole thing. I got talking to a leader who leads a group up in Blackpool near me, and I've become quite good friends with over the past 12 months, and she's invited me out to a couple of their CE5 nights. Obviously with Corona, they didn't have any last year, and they got to winter and it's too cold to be staying out at night. So like I say, as soon as we can, we'll be out there with that group just to give it a go and just...
It's a bit warmer down here in Cornwall, isn't it?
Not that much warmer at the moment. Storm season. What was I? We didn't catch your opinion, Greg.
Like yourselves and Ash, if I think you just the motivation behind what they're doing is the bit that seals it for me. I think early stuff, and like you mentioned, the disclosure side. Brilliant. Let's get loads of people talk about their experiences. All good. Then money plays a part and you start shielding stuff. This evidence, the NDAs, the fact that you're not allowed to, I think on one of the sightings, people weren't allowed to put cameras up at one point. They had to dip their cameras down. They weren't allowed to see what this light in the sky was by zooming in. Only Stephen Greer's team were allowed to film it. It's that kind of stuff that rings alarm bells. It really does. Like you say, if you're all about getting it out to the masses, why would you restrict the information? The only reason you're doing that is because you can then drip feed it and keep your relevance in the media and go, oh, I've got this, I've got this, I've got this. And
I agree with that fully.
Yeah. Keep your relevance and keep your revenue.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Because why else would you do it? You've got all these prominent people that come up every time there's a news story. So I'm going to throw the name out there, Nick Pope. So a big story comes up. Everybody will then go to the UK's version of Fox Mulder. Let's get your take on it. Whether you like him or not, he has this relevance that will always be relevant when there's a big story, and it'll always drip feed, drip feed, drip feed. And in my mind, he doesn't, from what I've seen, doesn't bring anything new now. He's just seen as the UK government's expert on UFOs.
There's a convention, he'll be there.
If there's a
it's like the two guys from Rendlesham.
Yeah, Pendleton and Burroughs. And Burroughs. Yeah, every single time there's a new convention, they remember something else from Rendlesham Forest, which they miraculously hadn't remembered. You know, it's like, was it Burroughs or Pendleton who had the notebook?
Burroughs.
It was who nobody had seen the notebook for 15 years, but suddenly he remembered he had a notebook. And come on, guys.
I heard you mention that on the
power of money, even if it was real.
It is.
And they go through that, the power of money, then it makes them add things that may not have been there, but then that discredits their original account, which may well have been true. But if somebody offers you money and say, oh, you know, come speak here, shed some new light, etc., and keeps chucking money at you, if you've got nothing else because you've retired from the Air Force and you think this could be an easy buck, hypothetically, I'm just saying, I'm saying it's not true, but that is, you know, that is an easy route, isn't it? If somebody says it's easy money to go sit down and chat to some people about something you've experienced, just add a little bit, mate, you'd be like, yeah, okay, cool, I'll take the money. Yeah. But it's the ones people like Bob Lazar, etc., are the ones who have never changed their story, you know, and that's where, like, that's for me is where I back Bob. Mm-hmm. In comparison to the other two. I mean, I'm not saying the Rendlesham Forest incident didn't happen. I think it probably did happen. But the fact that they come out afterwards and say stuff 10, 15 years later, like you said, just to make a bit of money, just kind of discredits everything.
So, I think with all of it, you have to follow the money. You have to follow the money. Yeah. And what is the motivation for that person coming out at that point?
Mm.
It's also it's also a case of the one that shouts the loudest gets heard.
Mm.
Yeah.
And there's probably a lot of bullshit artists out there that are shouting very loud and they're being heard, probably by people that have a mild interest in the field and are not actually doing any research. And I think they're then getting quite a large following from people. They're probably thinking, I can monetize this. Here's an app. Here's a Patreon. Here's this. Here's that. I'm not going to complain about Patreon. We've not got one yet. But we probably will eventually, I'm not going to lie. But it's just because we started the whole show because we have a passion for it, not because we want to make money. But if we do, it's not going to change the way that we present it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to change our research. It's just to pay the overhead.
Well, I was about to say, yeah, the studios cost money. So,
100%.
Yeah.
We need to sell some T-shirts at some point, boys. That's what we need to do. Merch store, your T-shirts. Say something.
I like them. I like them on the videos.
Do a crossover.
Yeah.
So you talk about being open-minded and closed-minded a short time ago. How has your opinion on aliens and stuff changed from the start? Are you more open to different arguments for and against?
I'll go first on this. I was undecided when I came into this. Mm-hmm. I thought there was something in everything. I very much have the opinion there's no smoke without fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still undecided. Probably more so. But I think I do... There were certain things that I'd read and looked into, as Tom said at the beginning of the show, that I thought, yeah, I can totally see that being real. And then we've done our research, very much no. But there's other things that actually we've looked into in more depth that I've felt the opposite about, that I thought, no, there's nothing in that to begin with. And now I think maybe there is. So yeah, I'm still undecided massively. I think the whole planet is, aren't they? Because that age old question, are we alone? You know, that could apply to aliens, UFOs, cryptids, anything paranormal. Are we, you know, they're all, are we alone? Are they the same thing? We never know. We could be. But yeah, I would say I'm still undecided. Tom?
I think my my beliefs were knocked a little bit doing the show because we do our research. However, there are some things which I think are just unquestionably, there's something going on.
Skinwalker Ranch, for example.
Skinwalker Ranch is a seriously odd one. And that's not really in my kind of UFO remit particularly either. And even then, not even I can admit there's something that's not quite right there. But, you know, I think, like, you look at that naval UFO footage, you look at Phoenix Lights, whatever, you can turn around and say, oh, it could be advanced, you know, technological craft the US or China has. It's like, well, that's all well and good, but where did it come from in the first place? Like, where did this accelerate off from? Because if it was a natural progression and there was no outside influence, then we would all have it. You know, there has to be something secretive. And why was it secretive to go down that route? So that's why I think there is something going on. And, like, you know, when we come up against things and sometimes we think, oh, you know, well, maybe it's not real because we read something or whatever. And then you could always look at it and go, well, maybe that's there, we're reading that because that's disinformation in itself to try and make us think that, you know, it's, yeah. But I think overall, I still believe.
Spencer?
I've got weirder. that yeah, I mean, from other people's perspectives, just doing the podcast, not just from looking at the material that we're doing, but from people that I've met who have their own podcasts or are interested in the subject online, things like that, I've been exposed to so many more ideas. Some of them I know that these two aren't too into, but yeah, I've been digging deep. I'm well into, like, obviously well into my spirituality. So I won't say too much more about that. I'll get a few rolling eyes otherwise. But
Spencer believes in magicians, basically, is what he's not saying.
Well, yeah, I do. I don't care what anyone thinks. But yeah,
I'm not taking the mic. I just don't. That's his belief level. Yeah. Tom's got his as well, and I'm kind of in the. I'm not saying I don't believe in magicians either. I'm not as much of a believer as
Spencer. Yeah, I love Harry Potter. Don't get me wrong, but.
No, I'm being 100% serious. I know you are, but you know. I know it's not your cup of tea, but yeah, I've been exploring.
You love
that.
Your cryptids, don't you?
Yeah, cryptids are all right. I'm more into, like, looking at, like, Aleister Crowley and you know, Thelema, Typhonian Order, stuff like that, you know, left hand path, black hat magicians, things like that. It's not really your cup of tea, but you know,
we'll do it.
You know, I've got massively into tarot recently, and yeah, I'm just exploring my options. You know, you've got to keep an open mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I think since me and Greg started this podcast, this will be episode 26 now. We've done an episode every week. Somehow managed to pull these episodes out every week. And some of the stuff we've talked about and some of the people we've talked to, we've never imagined the stories and the experiences that we've heard. And like I say, just be open-minded. And we always say, like we have people that come on the guest, talk about their, come on as a guest, talk about their experiences. And like, we don't judge. It's just, this is their experience. We're giving them a platform. For a lot of them, it's the first time they've ever spoken to anyone else about them because they've never felt they had anywhere else to go to talk about it, where they reach out to us because it's on sort of their level. And like, we've had people that have been quite scared to talk to us, but then like they got over it and sort of spoke to us and come on to an episode and talked about it. And I think, like I say, just about being open-minded. And because like we spoke to, you mentioned Skinwalker Ranch. We spoke to John Edmonds from Stardust Ranch. We had a really interesting conversation with him. I don't know, do you know much about Stardust Ranch?
No, regale me.
Oh, so Stardust Ranch is the Arizona version of Skinwalker. But you can almost think Skinwalker and then take some acid, and that's what's happening at Stardust Ranch. This guy, John Edmonds, spoke to us and confirmed on a podcast they killed 19 aliens with a samurai sword. Ghost Adventures has done an episode from his property. It's very similar story to Skinwalker, weird things happening. He has portals opening up. He has Men in Black turning up. He has ghosts walking through his house. His wife is regularly attempt to abduct his wife on a regular basis. And he's worked out the patterns that these greys will disappear and reappear in another part of the room or the part of the house. And he's worked out the pattern of how they move. And because he can't kill him with a gun, he's got a samurai sword. And he can, when one disappears, he goes to where he thinks it's going to be. And he's waiting with his sword to kill him. He sent part of the one of the aliens that he's captured and killed off for DNA sampling.
FedEx.
Via FedEx.
Very secure.
Nobody else I'd rather trust. And has got a DNA report on his website. The guy runs a horse ranch. He takes in unwanted horses and looks after them. That's his bag. And he bought the property, moved in, and weird shit happened right from literally the day he moved in. It's a very intriguing story. I was trying to get hold of him for months, trying to get him on the podcast, and then one day he just like, yeah, let's do it.
Are these like remains of these aliens then? Like, if he's like chopped down 19 aliens, surely that's something you'd stick up on your Facebook page, is it not?
Oh, he does put pictures up on his Facebook page of his samurai sword covered in alien blood. And
but where's the alien?
It was in his freezer, but it disappeared. The body was in his freezer. But him and his wife are both ex-government, and it's been about 25 years since he first started experiencing it. And like Bob Lazar, he's never changed his story. Mm-hmm. He's been saying the same thing for 25 years, and he comes across very genuine, very matter of fact. Yeah, he says, like, you don't believe me, I don't give a fuck. Like, this is happening. I don't care what people think about me.
You know, going into, I get what you're saying, Tom, but going into it, you know, if he's put it in a freezer and it's disappeared, but then you can believe in portals at Skinwalker Ranch, there's nothing.
But if it was me, I'd be like setting up a GoPro in the corner of my room while I'm about to lay down some samurai love in order to be able to like chop these people up. Do you know what I mean? We're not talking about the one occasion. We're talking 19 dead aliens.
But this is the first time you're hearing about it. So do some research.
My mind is remaining open.
The backstory.
I say that now, but I am definitely looking into some research on this.
Honestly, it is a very compelling story.
He has photos as well. Photos. He's got the DNA results that you can read that says this blood, whatever, isn't human. Don't say what it is.
We'll be doing an episode on this at some point.
We'll steal your idea.
Go for it. It's a fascinating episode. It's our most popular episode as well, I believe.
It is. Yeah. And it's like a slightly Skinwalker different.
Was for us as well. It was one of our most watched, actually.
Skinwalkers is a massive subject, and there's such an interesting place. I got interested in Stardust Ranch from investigating Skinwalker. I'd read the book and it's just like, oh my god, these people at Skinwalker Ranch, what the fuck has been happening to them? How would you even live with yourself the day you move in, like, and there's this big wolf things appearing, you're trying to shoot it and nothing's hurting it, to things like putting shopping away, go out the room, go back in the kitchen, everything's out on the table. And you've literally been gone for a few seconds, to cows moving and all manner of weird stuff appearing.
Can I just say how it gets more weird? My first experience of Skinwalker Ranch, and then I obviously researched it much, much more independently, was watching Corbell's documentary and George Knapp's. The weirdest thing about it is when Robbie Williams randomly makes an appearance at the end, and that just makes the whole experience weirder.
Yeah. He's a big UFO advocate, though, isn't he?
So I don't know if you guys know about AboveTopSecret.com. I don't know if you've been on that one.
Yes, I have heard of it, yes.
No, I haven't.
So I've been an act, well, not necessarily an active member, but I've had an account there since 2004. So obviously we're, 17 years coming up. And at one point they published a story of Robbie Williams and all of his stuff. He'd gone to them a few years ago. How many years ago? 15 years ago.
And at said, the height of his fame then, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And said, this is my story. This is everything that's happened to me. And they published it as fact, even held up his a bit of paper with his username and everything for the site. And he'd been on the site for some time before that. And yeah, the guy's seems to be very genuine when he talks about UFOs. We've done a celebrity UFO episode, and he's on talking to people, and the interviewer's trying to sensationalize it and make him sound crazy. He's just there going, no, this happened to me.
Well, he does have the voice of an angel as well, so...
Some of it aliens instead. He's always been quite outspoken about it for a very long time, and like he took a time off from music and like traveled around like the US and went on like alien hunts and UFO. Like I remember watching a program years ago on it, and it was like, oh Christ, you know.
Plus, No Regrets was a smashing song.
That was a smashing song.
Great.
So talking about Skinwalker Ranch and the sighting they had almost the first day of the wolf at Stardust Ranch, this guy turns up, all of the house or the previous owner's possessions are in the house still. They've moved out, and he phones up the estate agent and says, what's going on? All their stuff's here. And they goes, oh, don't worry, go and have lunch. I'll get it cleared. He comes back, the property's empty, and every single item from the house that the previous owner had was stacked up in the swimming pool. And he's just like, so he's on the phone saying, what the hell's going on? Why the previous owner's done that? And they're like, we haven't been able to get a hold of them. So all of his stuff's just moved into the swimming pool. Anyway, he's walking around and he sees this guy in the distance, this hippie looking dude with long hair, walks over to him and says, what are you doing? You're on my land. And he's like, oh, I work here. And he's like, oh, I'm really sorry, you don't work here anymore. I've just bought the property. You're going to need to leave. And he goes, but I work here. And he goes, what do you do as a job? And he goes, I'm the one who kills the monsters on the first day. And he's like, look, I don't want you on my property. Leave. And the guy leaves, and he's never heard from him since. But yeah. That's your
sounds
first
like
day.
Asking him to leave was a grave mistake.
Cool, yeah. So, after this guy's left, he's walked off, and this guy's had this weird experience of the first day. similar occurrences happen like they do at Skinwalker Ranch. The problem is that they try and take his wife. So they try and abduct his wife. He ends up, this I shit you not, he ends up handcuffing her to the bed. Incredible as it sounds, and the whole story, when you...
Sounds a bit kinky, Greg.
I've had a similar situation myself.
But if you bullet pointed everything that happened, you go, oh my God, this guy is a fucking lunatic. But when he's telling you exactly what's been happening and all the experiences he has, when he puts it together in this one conversation, we could have talked for hours with this guy. It's so compelling. We've spoken to so many people since doing the podcast that their story is just, sorry, not their story, their experience and their account is so unbelievable. But when they tally at you, it's their own personal experience, and there's no reason not to believe a lot of these people, and that's why me and Ash, we don't make a judgment on there. We just Ash said, we just put the story out. If you believe it, cool. If you don't believe it, that's cool. We've spoke to a bloke recently who claims to have be regularly abducted by aliens, almost nightly, regardless of where he stays. Right from an early age, he had poltergeist activity in the house. His dad, there was some kind of Freemason thing. And he's been abducted by aliens since childhood. Well, on the face of it, when you listen to the story, it's bananas. It's like, oh my God, this can't be real. But we spoke to the guy, and at times you could see in his face, he was just, it was affecting him badly. It really was. And I think when we started the podcast, we were just talking about cryptids and UFOs, and we've gone on and had all these experiences with people. And we're like, 6 months down the line, I would never have thought I'd be speaking to some guy who's killed 19 aliens or gets abducted by aliens on a daily basis. We've had people talk to us about spirits coming to see them. We were talking to a young lady, and she had an experience while we're on the phone with her.
Wow.
And it's just like, well, she sent us tons of videos of things happening in her house.
One thing we're really looking to expand into moving forward is talking to more people about their experiences. Mm. So, I'm just going to level with you guys. I've seen some weird stuff. When I was a child in my first house, this is going to sound ridiculous, but bear with me. I was haunted by what looked like a bear in my attic. I moved into a property years later, and my sister and I were spoken to by someone through the walls when we were really, really small. I've seen a giant watching me in the distance. I've seen some weird stuff, you know, and so I can empathize, because it's hard talking about these things because, you know, a lot of people will screw face and what do you want about? But we did an interview, 6 months ago, maybe, with someone called Emily Davey, who had seen our show and contacted us. And she's very into, tarot, star signs, things like that, astrology, but didn't have a belief in aliens, and then had a really dramatic encounter with Arcturians and an abduction experience where it visibly left marks on her body, and she showed us the photographs and things. And I don't know how she came across us, but she contacted us and said, look, you know, if you want to chat about it, it'd be great to have a conversation about my experiences. And she was saying for her, the hardest part was, she already had a spiritual belief that most people wouldn't, you know, and couldn't align themselves with. But to have her own belief system shaken by this extraterrestrial experience, which was not part of her belief system. And you can see that conviction, when you're talking to people. So, you know, I mean, we're exactly the same. We'd never ridicule anyone. We're just eager to talk to people about their experiences and see what they've witnessed and hear more about it.
Yeah, that's good. That's what I wanted to ask. You sort of mentioned, then, Spencer, about any personal experiences that you guys have had. So, Mike, Tom, have you guys had anything? Any sort of paranormal experience?
I've had one, and the boys will vouch for me on this. I don't share it often. I haven't talked about it on my channel, on our channel, purely, and the reason why I say my is because my face is clearly going to be on camera when I say it. Because it's your podcast and everybody's being so open and honest and so kind, I feel like I might share it with you for the first time. So probably one of the real reason I'm probably interested in extraterrestrials and aliens is because as a kid, I've definitely seen one. So when I was about walking age, I would let's call it 4 years old. Couldn't tell you specifically, but it's about 4 years old. I woke up in the middle of the night, 2-3 in the morning, and I got out of my little bed and I walked towards my window. And for some reason, I wanted to look outside, so I opened the curtains. Nothing there. I then turned around, and in my doorway was a tall, I would describe him as grey, a dark grey colour with big black eyes. and it towered in the doorway. So it was bending down in the doorway. I ran under its legs into my parents' bedroom, like you would do if you were having a nightmare, right? Went to my parents, oh, mum, I've seen something in my room. And they just put me in their bed, went to sleep, nothing more of it. However, and obviously at the time, being 4 years old, the only thing alien related on the TV, might I add, that I ever would have seen would have been E.T. And it definitely wasn't E.T. that I saw, right? So years and years later, I tell my mum about this. She's like staring at me. And she's like, well, probably around about the same time, she goes, I woke up in the middle of the night and I swear someone was peering around the top of the door with big black eyes staring at me. Now, I can't tell you for sure whether it was the same night, but I was a child at the time, right? So that was a bit eerie and a bit weird. And she goes, but there's another thing. She goes, your gran, which is her mum, she lived in Plymouth, which is not where we are, but it's about 70 miles away. It's irrelevant, really. But anyway, she goes, she was out in the garden one evening pulling her washing in when it was like dusk getting dark. And she saw four or five lights dance around in the sky and then shoot up. So not in a way that an aircraft performed, especially bear in mind, it would have been the 60s, 70s at the time, right? And she never told her husband, which is my granddad. She never told her sons, which are my uncles, but she told my mum. So my grand shared the story with my mum. I'd shared the story with my mum. And my mum had a story which correlated kind of all of it together. And it was like, it was just the weirdest feeling. It's like my gran saw something, my mum saw something, and I saw something. And it was just the oddest thing. But like, I remember watching documentaries and bits when I was a lot older about like grey aliens and just staring at them going, well, I've seen one of they. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've had one of those in my bloody bedroom. But it was never a small, it wasn't small, it was tall. And then, like, you look now and it's like, oh, well, the small greys go with the big, tall greys. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's like kind of on the level of what I saw. And, you know, I never changed my story. It wasn't a small grey alien. I wasn't like, oh, maybe it was because I was small, it seemed big. It definitely towered in my doorway. Right. And, like, I've only ever told, literally, probably about 10 people I've only ever told. And like, I always said one day I might share it on the channel, but don't think I ever will. Well, but since we're on your podcast and nobody can see my face, why the hell not? Since you mentioned your ghost story and I've had a couple of beers, we're good.
I mean, just to add some like credence to that as well is it took me a couple of years of friendship with Tom and a good couple of drinks for him one night to sort of open up to me about this story. And you, at the time, you hadn't really told anyone.
You said the scariest thing of all, though.
What was that?
The scariest thing of all, the one thing, so I always thought like someone was in my house, right? And I ran under his legs terrified. And Spencer always turned around and said, well, what if he was putting you back? And that's why you're awake. And I was like, oh, God, how nah? How nah? I was like, nah. He's like, maybe you should go through hypnotic regression. I was like, no thank you.
Wow. I'd rather not. Thanks for sharing that. Thank you for sharing that, though.
Yeah,
that's right. So. It's nothing, you know, it's nothing revelating, but I saw something and there's a couple of bits that kind of cooperate within the family and stuff. So it is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's good because like you're getting that validation for yourself that other people possibly seeing the same thing or related things. And
my dad thinks I'm absolutely talking out of my ass and I'm nuts because that's the way he is. And even if the government come around in 10 days and go, aliens are real, I'll be like, no, they're not. Like, that's what I mean. We don't have a discussion about it. My mum's like, oh, actually, yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? It's a different dynamic there.
I've not had an experience of such of visually seeing something. I've had a feeling. I've felt something paranormal. So when I was younger, my dad used to live in a really, really old house, which was thatched down in a place called Kalenic, which is outside of Truro, where we still live now. And the house was at least 500 years old. I mean, they're really, really old houses. And there was a row of three of them, and they used to be all one, but obviously split up over the years and whatever. And I was never told this at the time because I was about 8 or 9, I think, when they were there, 10. But I've since from my mum told me that that the house, they are all three of them really, really haunted. She knows somebody that used to live in the one at the end, and that they had really, really weird experiences. But when I was there, I remember lying in bed and regularly hearing things fall over. I used to smell things. I used to get sudden, like, really bad chills when it wasn't really cold. It was like, it was a house that was heated by kind of like an open fire. So it was that intense heat in the house. But then suddenly you go from that intense heat to suddenly being really freezing, but it would only be for a couple of seconds or a split second, then it would pass. So it's very bizarre. So I remember things like that happening, but I never remember actually seeing anything. But the house in the middle, I remember having a conversation, not at the time, but years later, because my family kept in touch with those neighbours, having a conversation with the owners of that house. And this is after I obviously found out that it was haunted. And they said that quite regularly, they would have a poltergeist. They would see items raise in the property and be thrown at the wall. And they said one of the worst ones is when there was a vase that had literally, so I think someone had bought his wife some flowers, and they placed, she just cut the ends off, you know, taking them out of the cellophane, got the vase out of the cupboard, put it on the side, filled it up with water, put the flowers on, and then placed it where she wanted to on the side in the kitchen, because it was a very open plan. She then turned around to carry on what she was doing, which I think was cooking or putting shopping away. And suddenly she heard this, well, she didn't hear it rise, but she heard this massive crash, and it went from one side of the room to the other and completely smashed into pieces. It's not as if something had fallen off. It's something as if someone had gone as hard as they could with a vase like that against the wall.
Wow.
And yeah, there's little things like that, but that was the one that scared the most because of the velocity of it. But as I say, I've not had any other personal experiences where I've viewed things, but I've kind of had feelings, I think, and smells and things like that.
Cool. Thanks for sharing those, guys.
What about you guys? Have you guys had any weird, unexplained things? Oh, you may have talked about them on your channel before, so I understand
that's if okay.
You want to gloss over quickly, because if your viewers are like hearing the same thing again, I get it. But
no, right. It's good to share. So I belong to a paranormal group, and I've been part of a couple of groups over the years. So I've seen a lot of weird stuff on those sort of investigations that we've done. But one time I didn't even sort of really put it all together till I witnessed the footage afterwards. And so I went in, my granddad had died, my nan had gone into a care home. So we were sorting out a house, and my mum was sorting out a house and whatnot. So we were going over there the last weekend before it had been sold. So we were just going to tidy out and get everything out of the house. And so as per many paranormal investigators, I carry a few bits of equipment with me wherever I go. And this is an old house, really old house. My mum grew up in the house, been in the family for 70 years, something like that. But it was a real old house. And so I said to my mum, I said, look, I don't know how you feel about this. My auntie was there as well. It's like, I've got my camera, I've got my voice recorder. Are you okay if I just go and have a little look around the house with a camera? She's just like, yeah, go for it. So green light. Cheers, mum. So I went around the house and I went up to the main bedroom. I'll try and keep this brief, but it's a good story of what happened. So I go into the bedroom. My daughter comes in and she closes the door behind us. It's an old house with like a latch door. She walks back to me, and as she's walking back to me, the door opens behind her. So she looks round, notices it, and goes back and shuts it. And why not? She's a little bit freaked out because I'm talking into this little voice recorder and the little full spectrum camera in the windowsill pointing against the wall, into the room. And I'm chatting to nobody in the room. She's freaked out. She's only little. She's like, I need to go. I was like, yeah, it's fine. Go down and see Nanny downstairs. As she's just about to go out, the door opens. And she goes out the door, doesn't sort of realise, and I didn't even twig at that point. Anyway, I'll go and close the door. I'm chatting away. Door opens again. So I go and close it. And then nothing really happens. And just towards the end, I say, right, thank you for speaking with me. If you want to make yourself known and all this kind of stuff, got the video camera, I'll leave it here. Do your thing kind of thing to nobody. And I go out of the room. It's not till I'm reviewing the footage later that every time we mention about going out, or the just before the door opens, an orb appears. And just before I'm about to go out the last time, I've got it, I've put it up on our page, I've got it up on YouTube as a clip. I say, right, thanks, I'm going to go now. And as I say that, this white, bright orb appears, circles around the room and goes out the door just before I do. So if you've seen Donnie Darko,
yes,
you know where the bits come out? It's almost like that sort of follows the path before I go out the room, as clear as day, and it goes right out the room just before I walk out. And I don't think anything of it because I didn't see it at the time. That room was where my granddad died. And three people from the family have actually died in the house. And I set the camera up in another room where I know the other two died. Nothing in there. Just this one where my granddad died. It's a great... I'll send you guys the clip.
Yeah, mate. It's
really interesting. That.
I know what you mean about the tunnel phase. It's like your destiny.
It's really weird. And and it's very apparent, even just on the footage that is there. So that's one. I've seen weird stuff just doing the paranormal investigations, and stuff come up on spirit boxes that I can't really, it seems to be too consistent with what we're talking about for it to be something random. Loads of weird stuff. I'm into more of the paranormal stuff as opposed to the UFO. I did start off on UFOs. I went to paranormal and then...
We're actually doing an episode at Bob and Jail very soon where we're recording a ghost walk with the paranormal manager there, which we're really looking forward to, actually.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So how about...
Sorry.
So how about you, Ash? Have you had any experiences?
I've had one UFO experience when I was 10. That's what got me into the whole lifetime of UFO interest.
Wow.
It was during 1997. I know it was 1997 because it's when the Hale-Bopp comet was visible for a few months. And it's just one of the nights, it's quite clear. So there's a few kids out, a couple of adults out on the street just looking at the comet. And all of a sudden, there's basically a classic black triangle craft, just about at arm's length, about the size of a 50p. So you can see the three points of light on forming the triangle and just traveling. It took about 50 seconds to get across the sky. And we were all just watching, like, what the hell is that? And you could see where the sky got darker as it was, like, traveling in front of it, like the stars disappear behind it. That's my one UFO experience that sort of led me to where I am now. Always been UFO. Never seen anything since, still looking. Like Greg, I was always UFO focused. That's what I mean. I have my UFO website, UFO group. I do lots of investigations and research into the UFO side of things. And didn't really have that much interest in the paranormal. And it was only a couple of years ago. I was like, well, I've been open-minded and it's kind of like I watched the documentaries and stuff, but never really had the active interest in it. And then a couple of years ago, I was in the pub in Knutsford. And we just, it's a poker night at the pub with my mates. And we're in the back room where there's, unless you're playing poker, there's no reason to go back there. There's nothing, you can't go out that way, you can't come in that way. There's no doors apart from the door from the bar into this room. There's a couple of toilets at the back, but they would close it because no one used this room, only when this poker night was on. So I'm sat at the end of the poker table and the door from the bar is to my left. So I can just see the door in my peripheral vision. And one of the guys had just left a couple of minutes earlier. And I saw a guy walk back in from this door. And I thought it was this guy coming back in and forgot something or whatever. And I saw him walk behind me. I could feel him stood behind me and he said something to the table. I wasn't paying much attention because I was playing poker. And then, but I noticed nobody responded to him. So I, not wanting to be rude, sort of acknowledged him. So I looked to say, like, what did you say? And there's no one stood there, like, at all. There's just no one in the room. So I'm like this, thinking, my mate looks at me, he's like, what's up? I was like, did Dave just come back in? And she's like, no, no one's coming. I was like, no one just walked through the room. She's like, no. And then the girl, the woman that runs the poker night, was like, you look like you've seen a ghost. I went, I think I just have. And like, I definitely saw someone come through the door, and I felt him stand behind me and heard him say something. It's just like background noise. And it's only because no one else sort of acknowledged him. I didn't want to be rude. So I looked and there's no one there. So since then, I've been like, I mean, I've been a believer since that moment, really. That just changed my whole outlook on life and
it's ghosts funny. And everything. It's funny because I was trying to explain, because I've had experiences like that before where you're conscious of, you know, because obviously you experience things like airflow change, heat change, things like that when people are around you. And it's trying to explain to people, although I wasn't able to visually confirm something, I could feel the presence, the energy, the heat, yeah. Everything. Trying to explain that to people was so hard until, you know, and I would be the same in that situation. I'd be like, well, you know, but when you experience it yourself, because it's not, you know, we don't just have our eyesight. There's so many senses and things that we pick up on, you know, even electric fields. So I can really, yeah, I tune in with that one.
I think I had, and again, this is why I've not said it before, but I think very recently I saw some UAPs or UFOs in the sky, but I mean very, very high. So I tried videoing it as well, and I've got a pretty up-to-date iPhone with night vision, not night vision, but it's able to kind of, you know, video better than previous phones when it's dark. And I did, there was some, yeah, that was it. Spencer's did a screenshot of it because... We'll show you, for the podcast, obviously not worth it, but we'll send you guys a picture of it anyway. But I was looking up in the sky, and I know regularly that the International Space Station goes over. I see satellites go over. I see Starlink go over. I know what that looks like because I see it regularly. I follow space stuff. I know what that looks like. And I was looking up, and I saw these two, what I thought were satellites initially, going really, really high up in the sky. And I'm not talking, they were higher than normal like satellites. So for example, the International Space Station would look a lot closer. These were much higher than that. They were almost around the moon. And I looked up at the moon and they kind of went like that across. They went in parallel next to each other across by the moon. But then suddenly they started changing direction and they were kind of zipping around like the moon, not visually, just from the perspective I was looking at. They were somewhere between Earth and the moon. They were just zipping around and they would go from there to there to there in kind of like a hexagon fashion. And I thought, that isn't a satellite. Satellites don't do that. Cool. There's nothing in orbit that does that.
No.
But I can't explain what it was. And they didn't come any closer to Earth. They didn't come down. They didn't go up. They were always at that altitude and I couldn't explain it. So I tried to get some video footage, and Spencer's done the best he can with it, but I can't say for certain whether they're two UFOs or not. I've got no idea, and the video footage is terrible.
What's remarkable about it is when you and I mean, it was, we were actually having this discussion earlier on, because talking about a lot of the recently released Pentagon videos, people are saying, well, you know, it's 2021. I mean, basically, we're advanced enough where cameras should be able to capture this stuff. I've seen stuff in the sky before, and I've got a very up-to-date phone with a decent camera on it. It does not photograph well. You know, nothing does. But I tried my best to enhance one of the videos Mike was taking. And what's remarkable about it is there isn't a uniform glow off of the object itself. It almost looks like an inverted crucifix. It's got a very tall light at the top, two extended lights horizontally, and then only a very small stubby extension of the light at the bottom. So it's not, you would expect with a star or a light off a plane, a uniform glow, kind of like if you're dropping a lens flare into Photoshop. Mm-hmm. But this does not look like that whatsoever. But we'll send that over to you guys to have a look at. It's very interesting.
It's quite interesting because the description of the movements that you describe, on my website, I collect basically every UFO report that's made to all the different organisations in the UK. And I collect all the data of see any hotspots, etc. And there's been quite a few that actually match that very similar description of the like the movements that you made, kind of like it's dancing.
Yeah, and I know David Fravor, who was the Navy pilot who witnessed it off San Francisco. Was it San Francisco? Yeah. He said the same thing about it's almost like if you put a like a what's it called, a ping pong ball in a jar, it almost looks visually like that. Sometimes it vibrates. But they were almost doing like a excavator. They weren't that quick. They were kind of, but then they like move a little bit in that area and then they move. So it was very, it was like a hexagon kind of.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain, but I rang Spencer while I was, because I was watching them for about half an hour.
Yeah. He sounded,
I haven't been drinking either.
Star spangled, I think would be the word. But yeah, no, you were very, fraught at the time.
It was a very clear night as well. It was that really good weather that we had back in, I think it was February. It was very clear, very clear, literally no clouds in the sky at all. But yeah, I still haven't decided whether I think it is UFOs, but by definition, it obviously is. It's something, but I haven't made the decision in my mind whether what I saw was an actual UFO sighting. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So you alluded quite a bit to about what's coming next for your show and your channel. So just let our listeners know where you can find you and what you have got planned in the next few weeks and months.
So we've got quite a few things planned. We're coming up to our year anniversary in July. And we're going to try to pump out as much content as we can before that. For anybody that's been enjoying our rap conspiracy minis, we've got another one of those coming and they've been doing so well. We're probably going to do a couple more. We have our trip around Bodmin Jail coming up. So we're going to be filming that and putting that out. Multiple new episodes that we're currently researching, ready to do live in the studio. And then hopefully, if the weather brightens up, we have our trip out with the CE5 team down here. And they have given us permission to film if we want. So awesome. That's going to be really exciting. There's so much happening. And we just can't wait to make more content.
So how can we find it?
Go to Aliens and Stuff Show on YouTube. So that's youtube.com/aliensandstuffshow. We're also on Facebook. If you search Aliens and Stuff Show, we've got a page and a group. And
we just go to YouTube and type in Aliens and Stuff. We come up as the first search now, don't we? So
I believe so, yeah.
We're up there. Please like and subscribe and hit that bell notification icon. Let's not forget to get the plugs in here, people. Here we go. We love it. We're trying to get to 1,000 subscribers. We're getting close.
Well, so hopefully we can help you on that way a little bit.
Yeah, we just wanted to say as well, thank you guys so much for having us on. It's been a really, really fun chat.
Keep up the good work with your podcast as well, guys. Great work.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Cheers,
really
guys.
Do appreciate it. It's been really good. Yeah, I think we could. Yeah, I was going to say, I think we could have spoken for a lot
we
longer.
We could do another one, I'm pretty sure. We can squeeze it in.
Well, if you guys are ever in Cornwall, you are very much welcome on the show.
Absolutely.
Thank you. We'll take you up on that.
We're getting your T-shirt.
Thank you very much, guys.
Great. Cheers. Take care of yourselves. Cheers. Bye.
You too, guys. See you later.
Pursuit of the Paranormal with Ash and Greg.